Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with some good news of our own, an announcement about our show's latest awards from the Society of Professional Journalists San Diego competition. Those awards included our past coverage of the issues facing local Iraqi Chaldeans concerned about the fate of their loved ones at the hands of ISIS in Iraq. Now, some of those relatives have found their way to the United States, and they have asked for asylum from the U.S. government, only to wind up imprisoned at the ICE detention facility at Otay Mesa. Last week, we traveled to the gates of that detention center, where we covered a rally and prayer vigil, and also interviewed local Iraqi leaders seeking freedom for those imprisoned Christian friends and family members inside. And we'll have a very special report on this important issue on today's show. We also have news about a lawsuit filed against the FBI by the sister of James DiMaggio, the man who kidnapped Lakeside teen Hannah Anderson and was later shot and killed by FBI agents in the Idaho wilderness. From Public News Service, hear about an imminent vote in Congress seeking to defund Planned Parenthood. And then on Green Scene, hear about a power purchase agreement secured by the developer of Thule Wind and why Boulevard residents continue their efforts to block the controversial project in McCain Valley. We told you earlier about our latest journalism awards, and that's the good news. The bad news is that the health department is investigating 55 suspected cases of food poisoning among the 170 journalists who attended the awards banquet at the Valley High last Thursday night. Two members of our radio team were among those who fell ill, which impacted our ability to complete today's show. And so, on the second half of our show today, we'll be replaying our award-winning interview from last year with a local Kurdish woman describing her family's ordeal after the ISIS invasion. We'll have national news from Public News Service, as well as news about a night out against crime countywide that's coming up on Tuesday. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio. East County Magazine has picked up three more awards from the Society for Professional Journalists San Diego chapter. Two of the awards honor coverage on our East County Magazine show on KNSJ, while the third is for an investigative report at our online news site, bringing our total awards to 83 since our founding in 2008. The awards were presented to our editor and show producer, Miriam Raftery. Our honors include a radio series award for our coverage of local Iraqi Chaldean leaders speaking out to halt genocide. We also took second in the radio interview category for our entry entitled, Anguish Hits Home for Local Kurdish Woman. The interview detailed how the ISIS invasion has displaced her family and caused her brother to take up arms with Peshmerga fighters against ISIS. We also took second for investigative reporting in the daily reporting category for our coverage of Soitec's failure to disclose negative impacts about a solar project proposed in Boulevard, which also revealed a conflict of interest involving a county planner turned lobbyist for Soitec. You can read all our award-winning entries in the news section at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Over three dozen local Iraqi Chaldean Christians from El Cajon held a prayer vigil last week outside the Homeland Security Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention facility in Otay Mesa. Religious and community leaders called for the release of over 20 Iraqi Chaldean Christians who have been detained for months at the detention facility here after they fled ISIS in Iraq. Two local priests from St. Michael's Cathedral in El Cajon, including Father Noel, led prayers, punctuated by gunshots from a shooting range next to the facility, sounds that can trigger fear in newly arrived immigrants seeking asylum after fleeing their war-torn homeland.
Oh.
One of the priests read a passage from the Bible, quoting the words of Jesus in calling for mercy.
Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom which has been prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me.
Father Noel had this to say.
We want to extend that love to those souls who are unfortunately basically in prison. And so ultimately we want to allow our fruit to bear forth through our witness today, that we're here gathered, where Christ said, where there's two or more gathered in my name, I will be there among them, and whatever they ask for in prayer, my Father will give to them. And so we come with that trust and that humility that this little gathering can bear much fruit.
Mark Arabo, a national spokesman for Iraqi Chaldeans in America, then gave an impassioned speech following the clang of a prison door in the background.
Behind these gates, not just people, behind these gates are our brothers, our sisters, our fathers, our moms, our cousins. Behind these gates are our family. And behind these gates we see the light of God beaming as bright as it could be. Behind these gates we have our future teachers and doctors and lawyers and engineers and architects and priests. But behind these gates right now, Christianity and our Christians and our brothers and sisters are being imprisoned without notice, without a reason, and without a justification. And so we have to do more. And through our voices and our prayer and our marches, we will find the light to make sure those inside these gates are outside the gates, are with us, at our churches, at our schools, at our universities, at our parks. These people have escaped death, have escaped slavery, have escaped ISIS to come to the best country in the world, to come to America, and only to be imprisoned by our broken immigration system. The symbol of America is the Statue of Liberty. It's not a gated fence. The Statue of Liberty, only in America, it says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. America is the light of the world. And Americans, Americans are the best people in the world. But our government right now is imprisoning 20 innocent Christians that have fled a genocide without a reason. You know, my parents came to America in 1979 for fear of persecution. And in 1979, they did not come to be shackled, to be imprisoned. But they came because they believed in something greater than themselves. They believed in something much more than their ambitions. They believed in America, in the beauty of America, in the light of America. And my parents worked hard. They put their kids through college and they gave back. And the opportunity that they got in 1979, we have to give it to these 20 innocent people in these prisons. We have to give them opportunity and the dream of America. And we need everyone to support, to pray, and to demand action. Because if we be silent, we are enabling ISIS to convert or kill innocent Christians around the world and in Iraq. God bless everyone here today, and God bless America. Father Noel just told me one of the girls in prison found out today that her mother was sick and she was begging the officials to see her.
At Grossman Hospital.
At Grossman Hospital, we found out her mother died. Because of our broken immigration system, an innocent Christian that had fled ISIS, that's dream was to see her mom one more time, made it to America, escaped ISIS, but because of this prison, without reasons, did not get to see her mom.
And her brother been here for 20 years.
And their family has been in America for 20 years. We have to realize what's going on. This is a Christian Holocaust, a Christian genocide. There's no processing in Iraq right now. There is no way they could legally get out. So by the time they finally come to America, they've escaped ISIS, but they're entrapped by ICE. And it's shameful. And it's not the American way. America's the best country in the world. And let's demand more from our politicians.
After the rally, we spoke with Arabo to ask him what efforts, if any, federal officials are making to free the detained Iraqi Chaldean Christians, all of whom have family locally in East County who vouch for their identities and are willing to take them in. Mark, what efforts have you made to try to secure their release? Who have you spoken to at the federal government?
We've been doing everything we can. We've spoken to ICE, we've spoken to the State Department, members of Congress, and White House officials. We have been very clear. We either need an explanation of why they're being held up or they need to be released to their families in San Diego. It's been 6 months. These people have family in San Diego. These folks have escaped from slavery and escaped from death and refused to convert it and escaped from ISIS only to be imprisoned by ICE.
So if all of them have relatives and family here who will vouch for them, these aren't strangers coming in where we don't know who they are, what reasons are you being given for why there's such a long delay in processing and freeing these people?
And the most frustrating part is they're not telling us a reason. The only thing they're saying is they don't have enough resources and manpower to go through the cases. These are 20 individuals that have family members that live in San Diego. A lot of them have family that have lived in San Diego for over 20 years. They have a job waiting for them. They have housing waiting for them.
Have you spoken with our members of Congress? And there are three of them whose district includes East County and areas where Chaldeans live. Congresswoman Susan Davis, Congressman Juan Vargas, and Congressman Duncan Hunter.
We know that the families have contacted their members of Congress, and we haven't received any indication that they're willing to assist or help. We are putting on this rally today, and we did something a few weeks ago, and we're going to continue to do these protests and rallies until they're released. We're going to amplify the pressure. We know that Congress is dysfunctional. We know that they're going on vacation next week, and we know our immigration system is broken. But that's not going to deter us or stop us from really doing what we can to rescue these people.
We at East County Magazine and KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, will definitely be reaching out to Homeland Security and to our elected officials in Congress to ask for an explanation, and we'll be definitely airing their answers if they provide them and trying to get to the bottom of why nothing is being done to help these people that have suffered so much already.
Well, I want to thank you, and I know if anyone could get the answers from these politicians, it's East County Magazine, so thankful for your hard work.
Thank you. We're certainly going to try. And I might add that we did some research last year or a couple years ago when we had so many of the African immigrants coming in, and some of them were being detained too. Maybe a little bit less egregious situation in that they didn't always know who they were right away. Not all of them had family here, but still it was taking a very long time. We did some research, and we found out that in most other countries, it's not like this. If someone comes and they're seeking asylum, they're released or they're held in a minimum security camp. At worst, some places they might give them an ankle bracelet, allow them to go out and work, be with family while they're determining, you know, for sure whether they should grant them the asylum or not. And the entire process is much faster than here.
Yeah, we know that our immigration system is completely broken and dysfunctional, and that's not going to prevent our pressure on Washington and on ICE. And we're just going to make sure they're released.
Well, thank you for joining us. We look forward to continuing this conversation next week when we're going to be having Father Noel from St. Peter's Catholic Chaldean Cathedral in El Cajon, as well as, I understand, at least one family member of one of the Iraqi Chaldean asylum seekers who is right here at this detention facility in Otay.
Yes, thank you.
On Monday, shortly before taping this show, we received a response from Homeland Security Public Affairs Officer Lauren Mack. She told us there are currently 28 Iraqi nationals in the ICE detention facility in San Diego's Otay Mesa, and she revealed one of those individuals was criminally charged this week in federal court with providing false information on an immigration application. Five others in the group have now been ordered removed by an immigration judge, she said. But Mac declined to tell us whether those who were ordered deported or charged criminally are Chaldean Christians or Iraqi Muslims or some other group. She added, decisions regarding whether individuals will be detained while their immigration proceedings are pending are made solely by the Department of Homeland Security following a comprehensive review of each case. In making such determinations, ICE weighs a variety of factors, including the person's conviction record, immigration history, ties to the community, risk of flight, and whether he or she poses a potential threat to public safety. All individuals who come into ICE custody receive due process and access to the immigration courts under the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice's executive order for immigration review, the ICE spokesperson added in an email to East County Magazine. But the U.S. has one of the strictest policies for asylum seekers in the entire world. According to Amnesty International, other countries typically do not put asylum seekers fleeing violence in their homelands into detention for extended periods of time, but instead use alternatives such as release to family, in some cases with ankle bracelets, pending a bond hearing on their asylum status. And in some places, such as Canada, those awaiting asylum decisions are even granted work permits. But not in the United States, where the detention facility at Otay, like many others, is run by the Corrections Corporation of America, a private prison that is bringing in over $150 a day for every person that remains detained. So for now, the long wait continues for the detained Chaldean Christians and their family members here in East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. According to law enforcement, James DiMaggio kidnapped Lakeside teen Hannah Anderson after first torturing and murdering her mother and brother, then setting fire to his house and boulevard with their bodies inside. The crime triggered a multi-state manhunt that ended when FBI agents killed DiMaggio in the Idaho wilderness where he had taken Anderson. But now DiMaggio's sister, Laura DiMaggio Robinson, has filed a claim with the FBI and also plans to file a lawsuit in Idaho federal court next week, 10 News reports. She seeks over $20 million in damages from the FBI for wrongful death, personal injury, and property damage. Her lawyer, C. Keith Greer, told NBC 7 TV that Robinson knows that her brother was a very kind man, certainly not one to shoot at an FBI agent. Anderson has stated in prior media interviews that she was abducted against her will and threatened with harm if she attempted to flee her captor, though DiMaggio's sister has voiced doubts about Anderson's story. Anderson told NBC's Today Show that DiMaggio tried to build a fire to signal for help. Greer contends that DiMaggio fired his rifle to signal for help, even though he was on the run from the law. The claim argues that the FBI should have asked DiMaggio to drop his weapon before agents opened fire. The FBI told 10 News that the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice will review the claim and will respond in the appropriate manner to the parties involved. No further comments will be made at this time regarding the filing of the claim. The FBI's use of force policy allows lethal force if an agent believes a suspect poses an imminent threat to the agent or to another person, such as Anderson in this case.
The U.S. Senate is set to vote today on whether to strip Planned Parenthood of $500 million in federal funding. The vote comes in the wake of several undercover videos made by a California-based anti-abortion group that shows Planned Parenthood representatives discussing the provision of fetal tissue for research. Kathy Kinnear, president of Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California, says they support fetal tissue research, which is legal as long as the provider is solely reimbursed for costs.
So there are no profit involved, and they take that reimbursement and say we're selling fetal body parts. And it's a lie and a distortion of fact. They're willing to do anything to defund Planned Parenthood and make abortion illegal.
Politicians in many other states have called for investigations into Planned Parenthood, but California's Attorney General Kamala Harris said she plans to investigate the group that made the videos because taping without consent in California is illegal. Last week, a federal judge halted the release of another video for that same reason. Dr. Jennifer Kearns is an abortion provider, an assistant professor at UCSF, and a member of Physicians for Reproductive Health.
Fetal tissue research is a long-standing area of research and one that has consistently advanced science and medicine. And every member of society has benefited from treatment discoveries that have been made from this research.
Very little of Planned Parenthood's work involves abortion, and they do not use federal funds for the procedure. Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein have both indicated they plan to vote against the bill to defund the organization. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Southern California Edison has signed a 15-year power purchase agreement with Iberdrola Renewables to buy electricity from the Thule Wind Project planned in McCain Valley near Boulevard in East County. The agreement covers the first phase of the 14,000-acre project, which includes 67 turbines on Federal Bureau of Land Management property at the gateway to the McCain Valley Recreation Area, as well as on privately owned Rough Acres Ranch. Although permits for the project's first phase have been approved, permission from the California Public Utilities Commission is still needed, and they must provide opportunity for public comment. The project has generated substantial opposition in the community, with concerns raised over the impact of 500-foot-tall turbines lining the main entry to the federal recreation area. Two lawsuits remain pending. Donna Tisdale, who has filed two lawsuits seeking to halt the project along with the nonprofit Backcountry Against Dumps, told us, "We are still actively opposing Thule Wind and hope it never gets built." Tisdale also chairs the Boulevard Community Planning Group, which voted against the project, but was overruled by county supervisors. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who represents East County, voted against the project, but four other supervisors voted to approve it. Residents and environmentalist concerns include destruction of views and habitat, danger to eagles and other raptors, disruptions caused by noise, infrastructure, and flashing lights, and fire danger, since each turbine contains 200 gallons or more of flammable lubricating oil. Turbines would line the only road in and out of campgrounds in McCain Valley, so a fire or a collapsed turbine could potentially trap campers and other visitors in McCain Valley. Harley McDonald, the senior business developer with the Spanish energy company Iberdrola's San Diego team, told the Union Tribune that McCain Valley is one of the few sites in San Diego that is a viable space for utility-scale wind projects. She said, "We are very excited to finally get construction." The project would employ up to 325 people during construction, Iberdrola estimates, although the company has not yet announced how many of those jobs would be filled locally. The company hopes to complete construction in late 2017. Phase one would include Bureau of Land Management and Rough Acres Ranch property, not state lands and tribal lands owned by the Weipai tribe, which may include additional turbines for a later phase of the project. The lawsuits filed by Tisdale and Backcountry Against Dumps include a challenge to the BLM's approval of Thule Wind, which is currently in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The other is a challenge to the county's wind energy ordinance, including a waiver of low-frequency noise limits for Thule Wind. Tisdale told East County Magazine, "We had a professional noise consultant conduct testing at homes impacted by the existing Kumeyaay Wind and Ocotillo Wind turbines, who documented low-frequency noise vibrations outside homes at out to 6 miles away. We also documented high levels of electrical pollution at some of the same homes. Low-frequency noise emissions can trigger major stress reactions, such as the fight-or-flight syndrome," she said, adding, "The wind turbines have impacted people's lives and well-being." The legal challenge also questions a groundwater investigation for Thule Wind that is over 5 years old, completed before the current 4-year drought. Thule Wind has an agreement with Akumbuk Community Services District to provide millions of gallons of groundwater if Rough Acres' own wells can't fill the construction needs. Rough Acres has also secured a water purchase agreement from Pine Valley Mutual Water Company, but the shareholders are currently fighting to overturn that. The county has not yet approved completion of major use permit conditions for Thule and the new Rough Acres Ranch road needed to access the project and bring in the turbine parts and equipment. Iberdrola has estimated that the entire Thule Wind project could generate up to 200 megawatts, of which Phase 1 would account for about two-thirds of that power. The project would help California meet the state's ambitious renewable energy mandate of 33% of power from renewable projects by 2030. But some local residents believe the cost and harm to the community is not worth the power that could be produced. Tisdale says outside elected officials who support Thule Wind should consider if they would support 400 to 500-foot tall noise and blinking industrial wind turbines in their neighborhoods, operating as close as 1,000 feet of their homes and loved ones. For them, it is out of sight, out of mind, she says, adding, for Boulevard area residents, these projects are unacceptable wildfire-sparking monstrosities that will forever alter our community, our views, and public health and safety. Residents are also irked that taxpayers will help fund this project. Thule Wind is expected to receive a 30% cash grant or 30% investment tax credit based on the project costs, as well as $23 per megawatt hour in production tax credits. Howard Cook, the former chair of the Hukumba sponsor group, has reached out to us with additional concerns. Citing a photo published in East County Magazine back in 2014 that showed endangered bighorn sheep grazing in McCain Valley, Cook observed, the Thule Wind advocates and county said this was not bighorn sheep habitat, same for golden eagles. He also voiced concern that the Environmental Impact Report's eagle findings were written by none other than David Bittner, who was later convicted in federal court on charges that involved the deaths of golden eagles and failure to turn over key eagle data to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency. Cook is also concerned about water. The main source of water, 20 to 25 million gallons, for Thule Wind's construction was supposed to be provided by Hukumba Community Services District, other than that from Rough Acres' own wells. But Cook has documents indicating the district is only allowed by the Local Agency Formation Company, or LAFCO, to sell to water within its boundaries, not outside of them. Most of the green energy and other major projects in the area, including Thule, Soytec, Rough Acres, and Hukumba Solar, are all planning to use the same water sources, mostly Hukumba and Pine Valley, but a hydrologist at San Diego State has concluded that water needs from the Soytec project alone could forever negatively impact the ecology of the region by draining the aquifer below what can be recharged from rainfall, raising serious concerns about the wisdom of allowing so many projects to be built with the same limited groundwater supplies, particularly after 4 years of record drought. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Next up, we thought that we would replay for you one of our award-winning broadcasts that was recorded last year and has just won a second-place radio interview award from the Society of Professional Journalists. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. We are recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon today. And our topic at the top of the hour today is the tragedy that's unfolding in Kurdistan, and particularly in the Kurdish province of Iraq. As we've been hearing in the news, the terrorist group ISIS, which is a splinter group of al-Qaeda, has seized the city of Shingal. There's been more than 100,000 people who have fled the city, and there are many, many of these refugees trapped on top of a mountain, 50,000, some reports are saying as many as 200,000 people have been trapped for days now without food and water. These are the Yazidis, which is one branch of the Kurdish people. There are humanitarian drops of supplies that the U.S. has begun providing, along with airstrikes against the ISIS forces. Now, we have about 5,000 Kurdish people living right here in San Diego, many of them in East County. And my very special guest today is Amina, a Kurdish-American woman with ties to East County, who has asked that we withhold her name to protect her family members who are still in Kurdistan. Amina is Kurdish, and she has family that's right there in the midst of everything that's going on. She graduated from Grossmont College and San Diego State University, and she's also a very accomplished poet who's written some very moving poetry about some of the situations that have unfolded in Kurdistan, and sadly, more of that violence is occurring today.
Amina, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. And thank you for covering this topic on your program.
Now, first of all, how is your family right now? They are in the city of Shingal. What is the latest that they can tell us from there?
Some of my family members' family are in Shingal, but my family right now, they are in Dohuk. Mm-hmm. And what we hear from Shingal, like my family member, which is my sister-in-law, her father got a call from his brother who live in Shingal. And in the night when they attacked them, he called his brother and he said, come and help us. They are here and we don't know what to do. So her brother who lives here, he told him that run away. And he said, I cannot run away. I have 6 kids. They are young and where I can go. And then they hung up. So after that, he didn't know what happened to his family there and it was chaos. Then the other day, his other brother called and said, I'm in the mountain. My family, I don't know where's my family. I don't know where's my brothers. Mm-hmm. And the other day when he called back, he said, my 3 nephew are here, but their father and the other 3 not here, and we don't know where they are. So they are separated. And still the who called by his brother and who's in America is still missing with 3 kids.
Absolutely terrifying.
So this is kind of terrifying. I put myself in this situation. I said, if my sister or my brother call me, I said, come help me, they are here. They're going to cut our head off. What I should do?
Well, our hearts certainly go out to you and to all of the people that are facing this terrible plight. Now, it should be noted that the Kurdish is a very diverse group of people. They live in 5 different countries. We're talking right now about the Kurdish province within Iraq, but there are also Kurds in Iran, in Turkey, in Syria,
and in Russia a little bit.
And in Russia as well. There are different religions. The majority are Muslim, but there are also Christians, Jews, and Yazidis, which is an ancient religion that predates both Christianity and Islam. And many of those trapped on the mountain are the ethnic group or the religious minority, the Yazidis. You were telling me in the lobby about the way that ISIS was able to infiltrate this city and take it over so swiftly. Can you tell our listeners what you were hearing about that?
My people call me and tell me. They first tell them, we are coming. Then they scare them. So if most people, they kind of run away. And this when, like, the 1,000 people get together and run away. So beside they kill them, they get hurt and they get scared. And so as a group, like, 1,000 people, they run away from the city. So, and then they come after who left. They cut their head off. They kidnap their daughters and wife.
And they're even killing fellow Muslims. They're doing this supposedly in the name of Islam, but yet they're killing everyone except Sunnis.
Except
Other Muslims. Yeah. How does that make you feel to hear these people doing these terrible atrocities in the name of Islam? You yourself are Islamic.
Yeah, I'm a Sunni Muslim and it's hard to believe, really. It's hard to believe if they are what kind of religion they have or kind of people. But they say, Ashhadu la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammad al-Rasulullah, which is the sentence we say it as a Muslim. So whoever said this sentence is a Muslim. So right now, when they use this word, that means they using Islam and they do whatever they want. Like killing people, we Muslim and a lot of Arab tribe who are Sunni, they believe them. And in Shingal, what happened in Shingal, there's 2 Arab tribes, they enjoyed them. And they went, I told them, this is Yazidi and this is Shia and this is Sunni. They didn't know who's Yazidi or who's Shia because they're not from there. Mm-hmm. So these tribes tell them and they go in after them and they kill them.
Horrifying.
So they are saying we are Muslim, but we don't accept this kind of Islam.
So you denounce what what they're doing. And the atrocities are mind-boggling. We've been hearing stories. You've confirmed some of these, I believe, from some of your own people back there, and also some of it has been in the international media as well, about mass graves. People buried alive in mass graves on that mountain, including children and women. Beheadings, torture. And now you were telling me about women and children being sold into the sex trade as well. Do you have any more details on that?
The last news I have from them, I called back home, they said they divide them in two groups. And one group is in near Mosul, and they host them in their place, and they put them in there. And there is few women, they cook for them, and they give it to them. They don't know after that what they're going to do them to that group. But the other group, which is in there, they took them to a village near Shingal, a place, which they said they're going to sell these women to some Arab from different country.
So they're being sold to?
As a slave.
Arab men as slaves.
Yeah.
As slaves too. Absolutely chilling. You told me that when they came into Shingal, that it wasn't like they just marched in there, that they had operatives who were in hiding among the people.
Yeah, there is a lot of people. There are a lot of them. They are everywhere.
ISIS,
yeah.
Everywhere.
And I heard they are really educated people, so nobody know from there the way they are. They're not going to know. They're not going to have a suspicion that they are ISIS. You know, they think they're like normal people.
And you said they had disguises also.
Yeah, and they arrested a group a couple of days ago, and they found some fake beard and hair, which anytime they want to be ISIS, they wear those beard and long hair. And anytime they want to be like normal people in society, they take them out. So nobody...
How wide, do you have any handle on how widespread ISIS is, both in Iraq and beyond Iraq? If this is not stopped, how far could this go?
I think it's right now it's went too far. So everywhere, they are everywhere. I call them cockroach. They look like a cockroach, you know, and you cannot kill cockroach. Even if you would the nuclear weapon, you cannot get rid of cockroach. So
true.
These are everywhere, and it's hard to know how many there are there, but there are many.
Now, we are also hearing some stories of great courage and great bravery. There are people who have actually successfully, just in the last 24 hours, been able to go in and rescue a good number of those people who were trapped on the mountain. The numbers, again, the reports are varying all over. Some reports are saying a few thousand. I saw one that claimed it was as much as 45,000. We really don't know exactly. But a lot of people have been able to get out. And the largest rescue, apparently, was led by some Kurds from Syria who went in and blazed a path to freedom for many of the people that were trapped there. So we hope perhaps some of the people you know who were impacted will be among those that have found their way to safety.
Yeah, at the beginning of this conflict, the Kurdish from Syria, which called Yap, they were first one to go help these people on top of the mountain. But right now, all Kurdish from different part of world, like we have, like we mentioned, from five part, like Turkey, Iraq, Syria, and Russia, they become one, they are united, and we just think this is a powerful weapon. When people are united, they can fight with anything.
Right.
Yes.
Now, it's a very dangerous situation going in to rescue these people. The Kurds aren't the only ones who've been doing this. There have also been Iraqi helicopters airlifting some people out. Very crowded, desperate scenes on the news of people trying to get into the helicopter. A CNN reporter was on one that was overloaded. And unfortunately, there was a crash that we heard overnight. I'm recording this on Wednesday. Have you heard the latest about the helicopter crash? How many survivors or...
I know the pilot got killed, and one of the passengers who they rescued her from mountain.
So the pilot and one passenger.
Yeah, and the rest are injured. Three kids were like in bad situation.
Out of about 20 people or so.
Yeah, and the only Yazidi representative in the parliament, which is Diane Khalid, was in there. She was there to talk to people and help them. And I think she's fine, but she's her leg was broken.
Oh, dear. And also, there was a New York Times reporter
who was
injured as well.
Yeah. They have only three helicopters, too. They're going back and forth.
Now, you have a brother who wants to join or is already in? Is it the Peshmerga, which is a Kurdish fighting force trying to fight back and repel ISIS? What's the latest that you're hearing from your brother?
Yeah, I called back home yesterday and they told me he's still waiting for a weapon, to get a weapon and go. But still there is no weapon because they said on the news and everywhere, America is saying we give Kurds weapons, but still they just get some light one and some ammunition, but they not enough. Still, a lot of people wrote their name in the list, they volunteering, and one of them is my brother, but they don't have weapon to go. If they have weapon, we don't need any troops from any country. I believe our Peshmerga will be successful by themselves, but the only thing we need weapons.
Yeah, so your message to the world would be that more weapons are needed right away. The airstrikes obviously are not enough. It's a help, I would assume, but not enough. And so your message to Congress would be that more weapons are needed?
Yeah, my message to everybody, especially people, I think people has more power than Congress and anywhere. We need American people's support. You know, we've been like seven, this has been how many days is this going on, and we asking American president, Congress weapon, but they're still not giving us. But right now we need people's power.
And this is basically because U.S. law prohibits selling arms to any place that is not an independent nation. So it becomes kind of a catch-22 because Kurdistan is not an independent country as of now. And that brings us to the next part of the equation here, which is that the leader in Kurdistan, in Iraq, I understand, has come forward now and said that he would support a referendum for independence for the Kurdish province in Iraq to become an independent nation. Are you supportive of that effort? How big a difference would that make? And what do you think the prospects are of that actually happening, Amina?
I do support our independence. I think we deserve that because if you go back and see how Kurdistan of north of Iraq, like we have, like developed, like we have become like a peaceful nation between all this chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And why we don't have weapons? Because our leader, Masoud Barzani, said we wanted to show everybody we are peaceful people. We don't need weapon because we don't want to attack any other country. We want to live in peace. And until like a couple of days ago, he said, I just want to defend my land and my people. I'm not going to go to fight for any reason. But then when they attack us, and what you see what happened to our woman and brother and sister, they all been
terrified
and... So that's why now we were asking for weapons, not because we want to after that go against any other nation, country. We just wanted to defend ourselves.
I have heard that the Kurdish people are the largest ethnic group in the world without their own nation. Is that true? How many Kurds are there?
Yes, that's true. And there are about 45 million people without country.
45 million people without a nation
without
of their
a
own.
Nation. The interesting thing for me, we all want to have our country. Like this 45 million people want a country and nobody listen. And I think that's kind of strange, especially in this time we live in. It. Everybody deserves to have their home, their freedom.
Do you believe that an independent Kurdistan would be a strong ally for America and Europe in the region?
Yes, definitely. Right now, that's the only ally they have is Kurdish people.
Okay. Now, there is a petition on whitehouse.gov calling for Kurdish independence. That's one thing listeners can do if they want to support that petition. There was also a rally staged right here in San Diego a couple of days ago where there were hundreds of local Kurdish people and others supporting the cause who came out. Are we seeing other rallies or protests outside of the San Diego area? Is this now a global cry for more to be done there?
Yes, there is a lot. All around America, there is a protest. There was one in L.A. and the day before was here, one here.
Mm-hmm.
So all around the world, there is a lot of rally, which they supporting independent, but because when we had this all rally scheduled, we went scheduled only for independence. But then when this happened, we kind of mixed, everything is mixed right now. But we're still focusing on that, and we want to get that one.
And this is not the first time that the Kurdish people have faced a genocide or a terrible attack. Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds. This must bring back terrifying memories for you.
When Saddam Hussein gassed Halabja, I was in Iran. I was a refugee in Iran. I was in Iran because of another war between Kurds and Saddam. But I remember what happened to Halabja because a lot of people, like right now, a lot of people from Shingal, they go.
What are you hearing as the latest from Shingal? How many refugees are there, and where are these particular refugees coming from, Amina?
There's many type of refugee in there. Before this, if you remember, they first captured Mosul, and there are a lot of Shia from Mosul and other, even Sunni, who they didn't join ISIS, they came to The Hague. So beside them, we have a lot of other from Shingal. So there's a lot of them. And so when I asked them, they said, we don't know how many, but there's thousands of them.
From what you're hearing from people on the ground back there or other news sources you may have, Amina, do you think it's going to be possible for these displaced Kurdish people, including the Yazidis and others, to ever go home again? Do they want to go home, or do they want to find a safe refuge somewhere else in the world? Might they come here? What do you think the future holds for them?
Most of them, they don't have any hope, because when they talk to them, they said, we don't know what's going to happen to us. And all of them said, we cannot go back anymore. And the reason U.S. got is, I think most of them say that because they feel Iraq doesn't want them, because the way what they terrified them, they don't want to stay there anymore. They want to leave.
Now, we've just heard today that there's a movement to replace the Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki. Do you think that a change in Iraq's leadership could make any difference from the Kurdish point of view or not?
I hope, but I don't think so.
If nothing is done about ISIS, would you have any information? Are there ISIS operatives here in the United States, perhaps even here in San Diego?
I don't know that, but best I heard from news that they know already, they only know 100 of them. But they said that probably there are more.
Yeah, that's a very frightening thought.
I don't
thought,
know if they are still here or they went there to help them. I'm not sure where they are, but they're from all these people, there are 100 of them American. So okay. I don't know how many of them are here or how many of them are there. So
yeah, we don't know, but it certainly brings up what a frightening scenario, what a frightening enemy the world is facing right now in these very, very violent people that are committing these atrocities.
Yeah. And they're very pretty sure of themselves. They think they're gonna take over everywhere.
Very chilling.
Yeah.
Amina, do you have some final thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, I have something to say, and because we ask for weapons doesn't mean we are not peaceful people. You know, but right now we need weapons, and what I'm gonna say is that, like many people, I believe in the power of words, not war. Achieving peace through words and more beautiful results than weapons. But unfortunately, the conflict between Daesh, which is ISIS, and Kurds has changed my mind, and that hurts. We do not need American troops on Kurdish ground, but we need weapons, and not just ammunition and light weapons that Kurds are getting from the U.S. right now. We need more advanced, heavy weapons. But based on recent news I get from Kurdistan, we are currently only receiving light weapons and ammunition.
Amina, I want to thank you so much for coming here and sharing what must be very difficult stories, very difficult times for you, your family, and for all of the Kurdish people right now. Our hearts and our prayers certainly go out to you and your family and loved ones, and I thank you for joining us on the East County Magazine show today on KNSJ.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, August 3rd, 2015. I'm Mike Clifford. A variety of issues to kick off the week, including President Obama finalizes steeper cuts for power plant carbon emissions, the Senate to debate defunding Planned Parenthood today, a New York court denies freedom to research chimps, and restoring a fishery devastated by wildfire. And wildfires out west are topping the day's news, with California Governor Jerry Brown declaring a state of emergency as thousands of firefighters battle the Rocky Fire north of San Francisco. That fire has already claimed more than 24 homes. According to the AP, it's threatening as many as 5,000 more. Wildfires also raging in Washington and Oregon, with one firefighter killed fighting a fire near the Oregon border. President Obama has finalized new pollution control rules for American power plants. The AP reports the final version of the new rules to be unveiled at the White House today, calling for a 32% cut in greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030. That exceeds the initial proposal by about 2%. An industry rep says more than 20 states expected to quickly join a number of power companies in challenging the new rules in court. The U.S. Senate will vote today on cutting $500 million in federal funding for Planned Parenthood. Suzanne Potter's been talking with members of Florida's pro-choice community who are making their opposition known.
The vote follows the release of several controversial videos showing Planned Parenthood representatives discussing the cost of fetal tissue donations to be used for scientific research. Governor Rick Scott has called for state inspections of local clinics, but Laura Goodhue with the Florida Alliance of Planned Parenthood Affiliates says Florida clinics do not participate in tissue donation programs.
We're fighting back hard and calling this latest attack campaign what it is, part of a decade-long campaign of deceiving the public, making false charges, and terrorizing women and their doctors, all in order to ban abortion and cut women off from care at Planned Parenthood.
Anti-abortion groups have scored some recent successes in Florida. A law requiring a 24-hour waiting period went into effect July 1st.
And as families across the nation prepare to send their kids back to class, Illinois state leaders say that immunizations should be on the back-to-school checklist.
For school entrance, students must show proof of vaccinations against several diseases, including diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, mumps, and measles. Director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, Nirav Shah, says this fall they are introducing a new requirement of vaccination against meningococcal disease.
This is the bacteria that causes meningitis. Sixth graders must show proof of having one dose, and 12th graders must show proof of having received at least two doses.
Illinois families that object to vaccinations on religious grounds are not legally required to obtain the immunizations, but the parent must present a signed statement to the school district detailing the grounds for objection. Medical exemptions are also allowed and require a doctor's note explaining why one or more of the required immunizing agents is medically conflicting. Mary Sherman reporting.
This is World Breastfeeding Week. Legislation is pending in the Granite State that would increase protections for women to pump breast milk while they're on the job. State Senator Martha Fuller is a sponsor of a bill that would increase breastfeeding protections from just hourly workers to all women on the job in New Hampshire.
There are over 350,000 women working in the workplace at all different levels of job. Over half are between the ages of 20 and 44, which are the prime years for childbearing.
Opponents say the measure is not needed because employers already provide ample protections. Fuller says she's heard from plenty of women working all kinds of jobs who say otherwise. The theme of this year's World Breastfeeding Week is Breastfeeding and Work. Let's make it work. A New York State Supreme Court justice has just denied a petition to free Hercules and Leo. They are two research chimpanzees at the State University at Stony Brook. More on the story from Andrea Sears.
Animal rights advocates argue that chimps are intelligent, self-aware, autonomous beings. And though Judge Barbara Jaffe said she was bound by precedent to rule that chimps are legally considered property, Stephen Wise, president of the Non-Human Rights Project, which filed the petition, says her decision broke new ground.
For the first time, it found that a human organization had standing to sue on behalf of the non-human animal. She rejected the so-called slippery slope argument that if you gave rights to a chimpanzee, then you'd start having to give rights to other animals.
Stony Brook says the chimps are no longer needed and will be leaving the university soon, but Wise says if the chimps don't go to an appropriate sanctuary, the Non-Human Rights Project will request that the court block any move while it appeals Judge Jaffe's ruling.
And finally, an area in southern Utah once known for trout fishing, then all but destroyed by wildfire, is being restored. Troy Wild reports on hopes of recapturing some fishing glory.
Lynn Chamberlain with a Division of Wildlife Resources says crews are using heavy equipment to add large dead trees to the stream bed of North Creek near Beaver. He says the trees will help contain floodwaters that come down from the mountains and were previously held back by the trees lost in the wildfire a few years ago.
When you don't hold that back, then those waters have a tendency to come down and scour out the stream and get rid of all of the potential areas for fish to live. Really destructive on the habitat. It takes away a lot of the vegetation that would normally be in the stream because the water is just running unchecked and so fast.
Chamberlain says ash from the wildfire was also flushed into the stream, causing a massive fish kill last summer. He says the restoration effort should lead to anglers pursuing cutthroat and rainbow trout sooner rather than later.
Chamberlain says the same wildfire caused even more devastation to the fishery at Fish Creek, where restoration efforts are also underway. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from Sheriff Bill Gore. The sheriff invites you to join the San Diego County Sheriff's Department for free Night Out Against Crime events this Tuesday, August 4th. Sheriff stations and substations all over the county will be hosting block parties to help communities take a stand against crime, including Alpine, Lemon Grove, Rancho San Diego, Ramona, and Santee's sheriff stations or substations here in East County. Activities vary by location and may include free food, drinks, giveaways, and activities for kids. Meet your neighbors as well as deputies who patrol your area. All locations will have a sheriff's crime prevention specialist on site so you can get tips on how to stay safe. For a full list of locations countywide, you can visit sdsheriff.net. To learn more about the sheriff's crime prevention unit, including important safety tips, you can visit sdsheriff.net/crimeprevention. And if you can't make it to any of these events, you could leave your porch light on as a show of solidarity on Night Out Against Crime.
As gas prices climb, gas thieves are on the prowl in East County. Several residents in the Fletcher Hills area have posted notices on the Nextdoor online forum warning of gas siphoned from their vehicles. One post reports gas siphoned from a truck parked on Jimsell. Another theft reportedly occurred from a truck parked on a driveway. A neighbor heard a noise at 2 a.m. and saw an old Bronco outside, but didn't realize gas had been stolen until morning when the gas cap was found off the truck. Another neighbor reported seeing a man in a Bronco loitering on their street just a few weeks earlier at midnight. The Ramona Sentinel reports that six juveniles were arrested earlier this month for siphoning gasoline from a truck parked at the Ramona Unified School District bus yard. In November 2014, 10 News reported on a white taxicab whose driver was suspected of stealing gasoline from numerous vehicles. Surveillance video showed the cab pulling up behind parked vehicles from which gas was then siphoned. In some cases, thieves take only part of the gas, making it less likely that the vehicle owners will realize they've been robbed. In other cases, they drain the tanks completely, leaving victims unable to start their vehicles. So how can you avoid becoming a victim of a gas thief? A locking gas cap may help dissuade some thieves, however they can be opened with a screwdriver or lock-picking tool. A better option is to secure vehicles in a garage or park under a light or motion detector in a place where the vehicle is visible to others. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.